up, you maidenless fucks?
Mister, I hate Souls games, but I now love playing Elden Ring for 50 hours a week, it seems.
Yeah, you don't have the right. Oh, you don't have the right, and you don't have the right. I've been playing Elden Ring every night. It's better. That's the thing. It's just better than the other Souls games. The other Souls games aren't good. I'm sorry. I still maintain that. Like, I'll enjoy them for like 2 hours, and then they'll turn to shit. And the thing is, Elden Ring solves all the problems of all the previous Souls games. If you get stuck in an area, you don't feel like you've entirely done the wrong build and have ruined your game and have to start again, you can just go somewhere else. If you beat like a shit ton of people and are completely far away from the nearest bonfire or site of grace or whatever the fuck you want to call it, for you'll get some Estus back, like, if you finally beat a big, you know, a big group. Like, it just has a bunch of little quality of life improvements that don't wildly change the game, but just make it so that you have more fun while playing it. And you feel like you're actually exploring and doing shit and not just, like, walking through a dungeon forever.
That's fair. I watched you play last week, and I liked, like you said, like, when you kill, like, a big group of mobs, you get, whatever the fuck it is in that game, Estus or whatever it
Crimson
is.
Crimson something or whatever. I really don't remember.
The Crimson by Bullet from My Valentine.
My favorite video game when I was a little kid was Barbie Racing Ride, and you could pick which horse you wanted, and I always picked the Palomino. You can
Barbie's Racing Ride, huh?
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Wink, wink. Barbie's Racist Ride?
Oh, no. Why you guys gotta ruin all my things?
Because that's why you're here.
I could just call you guys nerds and leave.
So I give Elden Ring 4.5 out of 5 stars.
What is he comparing this to? Dark Souls?
Yeah, Souls and Bloodborne. You know, the games I like that I'm a...
So you just shit all over Scott in front of me? Is that what you were doing? High five.
Yes. And additionally, another quick hot review reference coming from your boy, The Batman.
Oh, was that a thing?
Bagman?
Yeah, it was the Bagged Man. It was good. It was actually really good.
Was this with the Twilight guy?
Robert
Pattinson.
Yeah, I don't know his name.
And Colin Farrell.
Oh, he did a good job?
He was awesome. He's probably my favorite depiction of Batman.
Wow.
I would say this is up there amongst the Batman movies. I think it probably edges out even Batman Begins. It's not as good as Dark Knight, so it's probably like the second best Batman movie I think ever. I think it's doing more interesting things than Dark Knight was doing, but Dark Knight is still just like it's such a good movie. But this is really good. It's very interesting. It switches tones a lot. It has good action. It's like a part horror, part thriller, part action. It's definitely worth going to see and going to see in theaters. Oh, and I hate to say that, but spoiler alert, the new Batmobile is basically like a 64 GTO with a jet engine strapped to the back. And if you go to the movies and you get that fucking like THX surround sound when that thing pops on, that motherfucker is fast and furious. It's so cool.
There's women sitting around you just going, gah!
Oh, my God. Yeah. On International Women's Day, Scott?
Absolutely on International Women's Day. I'm thinking of the 22% of the female listeners right now.
Okay. Jenna. When are you thinking about the females otherwise during your existence?
Well, I mean...
Why would you? They have a day.
Yeah, this is your day. After that, we're done. Mm-hmm. Also, shout out Vlad Putin.
Kidnapping
Brittany Grenier, WNBA player, on International Women's Day. He actually gives a fuck about the WNBA.
What are you talking about? Because of the weed thing?
Yeah, supposedly.
I was like, who cares?
You go, Putin.
What are you talking about? I'm gonna fight you. I literally want to take this microphone and throw it at your face.
The poor bastard thinks people care about the WNBA.
Oh, was he like trying to use that as like leverage of sorts?
He should have picked someone else.
That's what he's doing.
I don't know if there's any way to prove that that's what he's doing.
Yeah, we don't really know. He's a man with a swollen head, puffy cheeks, possibly irradiated, and he's just doing Vlad things, you know? We'll definitely talk about Ukraine on the next After Hours episode, amongst other things.
Good,
so.
I won't be here for that. Yeah. Fantastic. Had enough.
And we know we know a lot about Ukraine.
Oh my God.
I can find it on a map without the words being on it. Can you?
No.
I don't think so, listener.
Okay, Scott.
So what movie are we doing, Jenna, that you chose?
The Witch.
Correct.
The Vivitch.
Yeah, so 2015, Robert Eggers' first film.
That's this guy's first film?
Mm-hmm.
Good for him.
Also did one of Steve's favorite movies, The Lighthouse.
Oh, my God. All that rewatching The Witch made me want to do was watch The Lighthouse. I love
The Witch. Yeah, I want to rewatch that really badly.
I love The Witch so much.
Is that also a horror film, The Lighthouse?
A psychological thriller horror.
Oh, hell yeah.
It's had a
Robert
lot
of, Pattinson.
Robert Pattinson. I mean,
And Willem Dafoe.
Hung like a horse, apparently.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I am now getting... Now after rewatching The Witch, because it's been probably like, I don't know, like 2 years, getting really excited for The Northman, too.
Oh, yeah.
Like, really excited for The Northman. This is going to be good.
That was one of those movies where I was like, this sounds... So Robert Eggers, who's probably, I mean, he's done two movies, so it's hard to say, but he's definitely like, I would say is my favorite up-and-coming, new cool guy director. And then, of course, it's Vikings, which I love, but it's based on the saga of Amleth, which is what was the basis for Hamlet. So then it's a bunch of, it's Shakespearean bullshit, which I love. And then it's also starring Alexander Skarsgård, who was one of my primary male crushes growing up watching True Blood.
He's a hunk.
Yeah.
So this is going to be fun. I think Jenna enjoyed this pretty much.
I did enjoy it. You were annoying me yesterday.
I was cranky boy.
You were being real rude, so
I was being cranky boy.
Finished the movie and then took my ass to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So Scott was like, "Well, did you even like the movie?" I was like, "Yeah, but I'm done talking to you." So
we're saving it for today.
Saving it all for today.
Because I got a whole lot of shit. We're going to start with a little tiny history lesson because there's a whole lot of backstory that makes this movie so much fucking better.
About witches? And about early America?
Yeah!
No way!
So this will be fun. And then we'll obviously talk about the movie. I guess we'll just do commercial and talk about The Witch. Influenced by New Hampshire native Robert Eggers' childhood fascination with witchcraft and his frequent trips to the Plymouth Plantation, The Witch, subtitled New England Folktale, is a horror period piece that delves into the trials of a Puritan settler and his family after they find themselves banished from their colony and are forced to survive in the hinterlands alone, where they soon find themselves the target of a malevolent force dwelling within the woods nearby. Inspired by real-life accounts of alleged occurrences of witchcraft compiled together during the short existence of Plymouth Colony between the years of 1620 and 1691, The Witch is as much a supernatural horror film as it is an illustration of the zealotry of the English Puritans, themselves somehow victims of persecution by the English crown that was central in their eventual immigration to America. Something interesting I learned about the Puritans is before they came to America, they ended up going to the Netherlands for a while. And the Netherlands were kind of like, whatever, you guys are fucking weird, but that's cool. But then the Puritans got afraid that they were going to lose their English identity.
Oh, okay.
Interestingly enough, the other second most populous place that they went and emigrated to? Barbados.
Yes.
Yeah, where you keep your English identity.
Yes, well, absolutely.
Well, the sad thing about that is that they did for a long time, because they went there as white people in like the 6th to 17th century.
Yeah.
So yikes.
Yeah. Puritans, well, if you liked them before this, you're really not going to like them after, that's for sure.
I don't know who's out here liking Puritans, but all right.
also known as the Pilgrims, which is what we kind of know them as more so. They were separatists from the Protestant wing of Western Christianity, which is how I'm going to refer to it.
Pure for Puritan. That was the whole thing.
Very good.
Yeah, thank you.
That originated after the Reformation of the 16th century, ignoring you all, believing that the Catholic Church itself was too erroneous and worldly, arguing against papal supremacy and the hierarchy of the priesthood. The majority of the sacraments, we'll get into that a little bit through this movie, the ecclesiastical governance, and a whole lot of other Catholic bullshit they didn't particularly like. Yeah, not a big fan of the Pope. Didn't like that the Pope was in charge of everybody.
Me neither.
Their big problem was when the Anglican Church, which was formed after Henry VIII, essentially wanted to get a divorce.
Yeah.
Because, right. You know.
Divorce rocks.
Hell yeah. Talking to divorce guys. It's fine. Yeah, they thought that the Anglican Church was still somehow too Catholic, which essentially it was. They just put a different title on it and changed a couple names, and it was the whole thing, essentially. So they were arguing that the Anglican Church wasn't strict enough, wasn't Protestant enough. They kind of basically believed that there was a priesthood of all believers that could attain salvation through a justification of faith alone through a literal translation of the Bible instead of...
Oh, well, we know what happens when we do that.
Oh, yeah. Fun!
Yeah.
So as the extremist Puritans separated from the Church of England and established themselves in the New World colonies, the importance of the church became paramount to both their belief system and the structure of the colonies. Not only mandating attendance within the congregations, but also using the Bible as their code of laws that were strictly enforced. Basically, every colony had like a church.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them grew larger, you might have one or two congregations, but basically like Sunday, like if you weren't there, you were fucked.
Yeah, because you were getting fucked.
Oh, Sister Jenna. Are you stuck in the apple basket?
I would have been a terrible Puritan. Jenna, I would have definitely been a
Jenna,
witch.
Jenna, you would have gotten off the boat and they would have seen green eyes and dark hair and would have been witch!
Oh my God, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Yeah, there's no way you're getting off that boat in the New World and not being forced to live in the woods or burned alive.
Oh, no. I would live in the woods. The burning alive pass.
So it's not going to come to surprise to anybody right now that the five major crimes that could be committed in the Plymouth Colony were often met with the severest of punishment. Execution. Those crimes, in order of severity, mind you, include...
Playing your boombox too damn loud.
Number one, boombox. Number two, willful murder, which is actually number one. Number two, forming a solemn compact with the devil by way of witchcraft or consorting with familiar spirits.
Okay, but like prove it, bitch. You know?
Well, that's
also the law wasn't
the whole point.
The law wasn't a real thing either. It was all made up. So.
Oh, yeah. I have some interesting fun tidbits about that. Number three is the willful burning of ships and or houses. Number four, adultery, sodomy, and or buggery.
Buggery?
Buggery.
What's buggery?
Steve, do you want to explain buggery?
My first thought, I thought of Bugaboo by TLC, but that's not
Oh,
it.
You can't say that.
What? Is that a bad name? That's a name of a song.
You're not allowed to say that anymore.
Yeah, you're not allowed to say that word, Jenna.
You can't say that on TV.
What does it mean? What did I just say?
No. But Bugaboo is okay.
Come on, you guys.
It just sounds
always
a lot
deflect
like...
your own personal prejudices at the least likely person. This is how you get women to be witches and how you burn them alive.
Okay. Yeah. What does buggery mean?
Buggery is specifically anal intercourse.
What fucking?
Oh, anal?
Yeah.
Oh. But then,
yeah, you little
but
bugger.
But you just said sodomy.
So sodomy didn't always mean anal. it could also mean oral sex or anything,
yeah, exactly, yeah.
Anything that was not
non-vaginal.
Non-vaginal missionary, essentially. We think of sodomy like modern times of being sodomized, being, up the chuff, as the English would say. Buggery is the alternate term.
Okay, this is a lot.
That's number four.
Okay.
And yeah, last
so
number
technically,
four is anal.
Technically, places in the U.S. that still have,
that's
which
like a law.
On the books, anti-sodomy laws means that you literally could be arrested for getting head from your own damn wife. Getting straight head.
If I hated someone, I would just love to, if I was in the law, just be like, you're going to jail. Jail.
Who are you? Officer Jenna, BJ Police.
I would be the BJ Police. I said, ma'am, you're giving too many BJs. These people do not deserve it.
Happy International Women's Day, everyone. and lastly, bestiality.
Okay, I know what that is. We don't need to get into that.
Which is kind of weird that you have all these guys setting up these rules.
When a man loves a dog.
When a man loves a Doberman.
When a man loves a Doberman.
Doberman. Oh, I like that. That was actually funny.
So this has had to be weird. Or all right, you're setting up these colonies. And you're like, Brother Jacobson, what law do you think we should pass? Murder. How would you like to deal with it? With murder. All right. What next? Witches. Can't trust them. How do you want to deal with that? Also murder. Great. And Brother Pete the Sheep Sniffer, what do you think? Definitely should not kill the guys that fuck goats, guys. Those supple, supple goats don't want to fuck the goats.
You really thought hard about this, Scott.
You're fucking goats, aren't you? No.
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 Oh, poor Pete.
So, interesting assortment there. So,
he's just trying to sniff. He's just out here trying to sniff.
He's out here to sniff a little billy goat.
Oh my God.
So, as you can no doubt guess from all the shenanigans that we just went over, witchcraft was nearly synonymous with murder and could be viewed literally as such as the murder of one's soul and the souls of those around the sinner through the damnation brought on by a pact with Satan himself. And while the witch does occur somewhat, I think it's technically set in 1630, it's six decades before the Salem witch trials even began, which was 1692 through 1693.
Well, you could tell by how non-established.
Yeah. Basically, the witch trials is the end cap, capstone, whatever you want to call it, of Plymouth Colony.
Right.
And it's really funny how that basically ended was they were all getting real fucking, look at what it was. It was basically, how do you prove someone's a witch? It was two things.
It was, well,
and we see it in the movie, and we'll get into this.
Suspicious behavior, that was part of it.
No, legitimately, if you could be the
oh,
old lady.
The law, okay.
The old lady across the street, I don't like her.
Okay.
Hi, guys. What's up? Yeah, Mary Sue across the street, she's a witch. Burn her! That's about it. Now,
nice.
How do you prove someone's a witch? A, if they can't recite the Lord's Prayer, which we see in the movie,
mm-hmm.
and we'll get into that, which is also kind of a little bit of entrapment because A, not everybody was you were taught to read and you were taught basically to read the Bible, but being forced, by penalty of death to say, a prayer that you may not actually be able to say the correct way is kind of, a little bit of bullshit.
Yeah.
And then the second thing that was really often happened within, even before the Salem witch trials, but was really brought kind of prominently forward during them was spectral evidence, which was saying that you were visited by the soul of accused witch in your dreams.
So cool.
And you could say, so I could be like, I had a dream about Jenna and she kicked me in the dick.
Hell yeah.
Spectral evidence. And they'd be like, did you kick this man in the dick in your
it
dream?
It checks out.
Burn her.
Oh my God.
You just love to say that.
It's just fun to say. Also, by the way, I think you put Burn the Witch by Queens of the Stone Age on this month's playlist.
Yes, the four songs for those. Okay, so nice little plug here. I plugged it on my on Twitter and whatnot. From now on, going forward, I'm going to be making monthly playlists based on the movies that we cover. I'm trying to do like 4-ish songs per movie. You can find that. There's some links places. Otherwise, just go on Spotify, look for the playlist Groovy Little Spook Show March 2022. It's available.
I love that idea. Such a good idea.
Thank you. So for this month, the 4 songs specific that have been put up for this movie were Isle of Wight from the soundtrack, which is the ending credits song, which is like a spooky cover of a traditional song. Witchfinder General by Witchfinder General.
Yeah.
Witchfinder by Acid Witch.
Yeah.
And Burn the Witch by Queens of the Stone Age. Those are
You need all them witches on there. It's a band.
I know, yeah, but I don't think there's actually a song about.
There's a song. You'll find it.
You'll find it.
One of the guys from All Them Witches is dating Drea Di Matteo, who played Adriana on The Sopranos.
Shut the fuck up.
That's kind of fucking awesome. I did not
know
that. I love
that. Yeah, Scott keeps trying to steal the record I bought. He'll be like, this is mine. I'm like, really? Because I'm the one that used my card.
I just want the lime green vinyl. That's all I want. Anyway,
you can't even see it.
I'm colorblind. I'm not blind. It's not like I open it up and can't see the. See, Jenna, it's not here. There's no record.
Well, you fucking act like you're blind all the time.
Well, I am, but it's beside the point. Wow, International Women's Day, making fun of a man with a disability. Real what is nice.
Women are the same as having a disability. Is that what you just said?
I think I lied. I think she just likes them, but she's apparently
okay.
She's apparently engaged to a guy who plays in Whitesnake now. Like, not when they originally.
That's way less cool.
Yeah, that's.
Yeah,
sucks.
According to Wikipedia, her partner is a guy named Michael Devon.
It's not even a fun name.
No, that name sucks.
He's a Whitesnake bass guitarist.
Gross.
Oh, God, what do you do? I'm the bassist for Whitesnake. Ugh.
She has an ex-fiance named Shooter Jennings, though.
That's cool.
Shooter Jennings, the musician Shooter Jennings, right?
Yeah, I don't know if he just makes stuff under Shooter Jennings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Waylon Albright Shooter Jennings.
That's a good name for a kid. That's an American name. What's your name? Shooter.
Oh, my God. Let's move past this.
I come from a long line of shooters. My grandpappy school taught me everything I knew.
I fucking hate that so much. Terrible. Goodbye.
Anyway, all of this little background is just meant to give you a little bit. I have an idea of what kind of influence part of the core of American folklore, which is essentially witches be bitches.
Before we go any further, I just want to know from both of you, do you believe that witchcraft is real?
No.
No?
The actual ability to cast spells? No, that's fucking bullshit.
I disagree with
that. The actual people identifying as like a Wiccan? Yeah, those people exist.
You don't think that there's people out there that have some sort of powers beyond what you
might. We learned from MKUltra. If they have any sort of problems, it's not good enough.
Okay.
No, I don't. No, I firmly do not believe it.
Well, witches out there, I believe in you. So, come be my friend.
Come be my friend.
Not these idiots.
Okay.
Are you identifying yourself as a witch?
I'm just asking other witches to be my friend.
Because I'm just saying, you're probably more of like an herbalist, which is basically just like a practical botanist, which is just somebody who grows a lot of awesome plants that I can
cook. I love that movie from the 90s, Practical Botany.
Practical herbalist.
I'm a kitchen witch.
Kitchen witch, you're
and
fine.
I don't appreciate this fucking slander today, all right? I've had enough of you.
Witches aren't real. Like,
wrong. Incorrect.
There are people that believe that there are witches, and I understand having spirituality, and if one is to have spirituality, a spirituality grounded in like having awe and respect for nature is the one that I can respect the most, because I understand the human urge for spirituality, because the curse of cognition has like led us all to try to find meaning, and so like that leads to a bunch of making up a bunch of metaphysical bullshit a lot of the time, because even if you can become a scientist, like, it's like, who, it doesn't give you answers, it just gives you more questions. So like, I get that urge, but no, I don't think that people can do magic. And whenever it's you go on Reddit and it's like, you see a, you know, a thread from the R Witches sub or whatever, where it's like, we're all putting our menstrual energies towards hexing Vladimir Putin. It's like,
I'm not saying that. That's not what I'm saying.
But how is that any more or less invalid than?
Listen, all we know is that other, witches quote, unquote, ain't shit, witchcraft. But hoes and tricks.
What is your problem?
I'm not saying that. Hey, I'm not saying that. But
hey. Well, I'll say this. I will say this. There are people who are in charge of governments across the world that do believe witches, sorcerers, and magic do exist. And in fact, there are still 7 countries that will execute and or try people, probably in that order, truly. Those include Saudi Arabia.
Whoa, surprise there.
Tanzania, which in 2014 alone charged and tried over 600 older women.
Come on.
Gambia. Nepal. Which kind of shocked me, Nepal.
Yeah.
India, Papua New Guinea, and Uganda.
African witchcraft is so cool. Like, objectively. I'm not saying that in, like, what the sarcastic way.
No,
I say shit like, homophobia is so cool. Or, like, whatever, like, where I'm, like, obviously being, like, irony poisoned.
Well, that's where witchcraft originated, so.
It has been multiple cases of African soccer players being accused of doing witchcraft and, like, getting red cards for having, like, voodoo dolls on the field and stuff.
I have a voodoo doll.
It's cool. Well, you better not.
Don't go. Do not bring that with us if we ever travel to any of those 7 countries.
Well, good to know
now. You better not play for the Orlando Pirates anytime soon.
Fuck, I just got an offer.
Actually, there's a one of my favorite names of a soccer team is the Botswana Meat Commission.
You're lying.
Oh, that sounds like a bad indie band out of upstate New York.
I'm looking it up.
Botswana Meat Commission.
Botswana Meat Commission FC. They're also known as the Gilport Lions now. But they were like owned by the Botswana Meat Commission, which is like a non-profit organization.
Just like the stupid Green Bay Packers, that's the fucking origin of their goddamn name.
I really don't want to go on too much of a tangent, but African.
Holy shit! That their logo
is a little cow,
yeah,
of sorts,
on his way to the slaughter. Oh, that's cute.
African soccer teams have like the funniest names in the world. They're all insane. There's like hold on. I gotta find some good ones.
There's so many good ones.
There is.
I wait with bated breath.
This is such riveting content.
That's what I was gonna say the same thing.
Okay. Well, whatever. We'll save that for. We'll save that for Indomitable Lions.
I've thought of the Abominable Snowman.
Abominable Lion Man.
Benin's national team is known as the Squirrels.
Fun, but squirrels are little assholes. Some of them.
The Zambian national team is known as the Chipolo Polo. Which means the copper bullets.
Oh, that's cool as hell.
The Nigerian national team is known as the Super Eagles. Not just the normal Eagles.
That's something the Super for Eagles. You.
That's like when you go, if you were in like an Asian country and it's like a shirt that's supposed to be in English and it just says like, fuck.
Yeah.
And it's a little baby or something weird. It's like, that's giving me that energy.
I really want to get some new t-shirts that are Eagles. From like Thailand that just say like inane. Like they're ridiculous things.
Yeah. Me too.
I guess we should probably
do Ethiopia. Okay. Here's one. Okay.
You found one, guys.
Yeah. Ethiopian coffee soccer club.
What?
It's a coffee?
It's just Ethiopian coffee club. FC Kuntum, which is in
Guinea Bissau.
That's the women's team. Happy International Women's Day. Yay!
God, I swear to God, I'm going to fucking kick your ass in about 5 seconds.
Oh, there's also the Kaiser Chiefs in South Africa.
No. What?
In South Africa, that's not shocking. Kaiser Chiefs.
Oh, this one's also good. Club the Strongest, but that's in Bolivia.
The Strongest.
Hard Rock FC in Granada.
God, Hard Rock Cafe is fucking everywhere, aren't they? They have their own football club
now. That place
now.
Sucks.
The British Virgin Islands has a team named Sugar Boys FC.
Oh, I like that. Sugar Boys.
Botswana has a team named Miscellaneous Sporting Club. Jamaica has a team named Humble Lions FC.
I'm sorry, did you say I'm blind FC?
Humble Lions.
Oh, I was like, what?
I'm blind.
Watch me go.
Suriname is home to SV Walking Boys with a Z company.
Walking Boys.
Walking Boys.
That's for you, Walking Boys. Dun-dun.
Inter Godfathers is a team in the Northern Mariana Islands.
Outcast,
as in like Outcast the band, spelled with the capitalized K.
Hell yeah!
Is a top flight women's team in the Philippines.
Hell yeah! Ooh, and the Philippines, my favorite.
The Philippines, what a fun place.
Sierra Leone has a team named Anti Drugs Strikers FC.
Don't like that one.
I wonder what they're about.
And this is actually
fucking dare of the football club world.
These are my two favorite besides Botswana Meat Commission, because these two are actually still in being called what their name is. In Zimbabwe, there is Chicken Inn FC, which is named after the food chain
like
Chicken
Inn, or like a hotel or
yes.
Inside. Okay.
Which is named after a fast food chain. And and Chicken Inn's advertising slogan is "Love that chicken."
Hell yeah, I want to eat it.
And finally, a team in Cape Coast, Ghana, is known as Cape Coast Mysterious Ebusua Dwarfs.
Dare I ask if the team is made of all?
No.
Okay.
No, you can't ask, but it is true. It's not true. I want to take this moment real quick before to get back into everything also to say that if one has not, one should definitely visit Salem, Massachusetts. It's very, very cool. I've gone there several times in my life, both as a child and as an adult. There are a lot of quote-unquote witch shops, like real, like quote-unquote real-life witches of like the kind of people that we were just talking about. And they're fine. They're definitely a little tourist trappy.
They're fine. They're good people.
They're a combination. These witches, folks, they're tremendous. They're just the spells they have and the brooms. I tell you, the brooms that some of these women have are just, they're just great. They're huge brooms, folks. Huge. Great. but, you know, some of them are tourist trappy, have, like, a lot of, like, the same kitschy stuff, whatever. But the actual historical things there, like the House of the Seven Gables, and there's, like, a witch museum and several tours you can go on, and as well as they do mock witch trials. And the Salem Museum, which is not really...
Do you mock witch burnings? And Jenna, would you like to go to that?
Not burnings, but the mock trials is really fucking cool.
We were supposed to go there for my 30th birthday, but we're both poor, so...
Yeah, well, COVID wasn't exactly fun
Maybe
for
my
us.
31st birthday we can go. But yeah, that's my like number one place I want to go, too.
Oh, we should do like a trip there.
Oh, because you guys live actually fairly a lot closer than we do.
It's a 4-hour drive.
Literally looked it up to drive because like it was like when like, well, tickets, plane tickets are still expensive. And I was like, that's a 12-hour drive.
Well, drive is sure going to be really affordable now.
And I was like, fuck. And I was like, also, me and Scott in a car for that long? Absolutely not. Pass. So.
But there's a lot of cool stuff there. And it really also helps to get the feeling because there is just something about even growing up in New Jersey, like we have a lot of woods and nature that's like interesting, but there is something very old feeling about when you're in New England. I mean, part of it is the fact that it's like literally the oldest man-made structures that are still like around for the most part, like in America that you can go to, but also the nature is beautiful and compelling and like vaguely mystical. So like it does set a vibe.
You're just selling me more.
I didn't say we wouldn't go.
I know. That's something I'm doing. I'm just like, oh, that sounds so great. I wish you could be there right now. But instead, I'm in this basement drinking Diet Coke, which I'm happy about the Diet Coke.
Which you're happy about?
Which.
Perfect. All right.
Go on.
I'm just going to sum up the movie now as we whimsically talked about New England and football clubs. English Pilgrim and New World Settler William, played by the awesome Ralph Ineson, that man could read me the phone book.
Oh my God.
Was that the dad?
That's the dad.
Oh,
just God, I wish I didn't have this Muppet voice and I sounded like him. He finds himself banished shortly after appearing before a tribunal of elders within his colony over a religious dispute, which we basically learn is that he thought he was more pious.
And he sucked.
Departing alongside his wife, Catherine, played by Kate Dickey.
Sucks the most.
Kate Dickey, if you probably will realize, was Lysa Arryn in Game of Thrones.
Yep.
Who?
Remember the woman that was breastfeeding the 10-year-old kid?
The sister?
The sister, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Ugh.
Yeah. Eldest daughter, Thomason, played by Anya Taylor-Joy, who is just a head with giant eyeballs on it.
She's, like, so angelic, like, that scene where it's just her head, I was like, holy, this girl is gorgeous. Like.
This is also her first, her debut film. Just like, wow. This was, yeah.
Yeah, I bet, I was like, oh yeah, I bet they saw her face and were just like, oh my God.
I think if I'm remembering correctly from some of the stuff I was reading, I think when Robert Eggers interviewed her, like she was the first interview and that's, yeah, like, he chose her like off the bat.
Yeah, good choice.
We have eldest son Caleb, played by, this is the coolest fucking name for a kid from England in the fucking world, Harvey Scrimshaw.
Yeah.
Sounds like he should be on board the Pequod hunting whales.
Okay, I have to make a comment about his hair. The hairdo was giving me 2005 elementary school.
He looked like he would have been like, in Oasis.
I was like, guy, like this hair is, everything else was so perfect that hairstyle, I couldn't handle it.
Well, they lived in the middle of nowhere.
I'm saying it was wrong. It wasn't correct for the time. They didn't. The hairstyle.
How do you know?
Yeah, were you there, Jenna?
What are you talking about?
The hair wasn't correct for the time?
No, the way his hair was. That was like a hairstyle that someone would have in 2005. Were you not listening to what I was saying?
You're factually inaccurate, but okay.
No, I'm not. Look at everybody else's.
Joining the family are the twins, Mercy and Jonas, played by Ellie Granger and Lucas Dawson. They settle in the wilderness outside the colony and over a year's time establish themselves, albeit poorly. William, while a staunch Puritan, has little to no skill as either a farmer or a hunter, as we soon learn. Catherine gives birth.
That man sucks at hunting.
Oh,
dude.
God.
Yeah.
Watching him shoot a gun and just get hit in the face with the wick was so, I don't know why. Every time that happens, it's just so fucking funny to me.
My man suck at hunting.
The nice thing, though, about Ralph Ineson, I will say this, is that he actually helped direct and coach Harvey Scrimshaw, who was Caleb, because Caleb couldn't really, or Harvey, I should say, couldn't really get what Eggers wanted him to do. And obviously, the kid also had some of the most dramatic scenes in the movie.
Oh, I mean, that kid was fucking awesome.
Oh, he's great. Like, Innocent actually, because he has kids and he actually has previously worked as a acting coach for children, helped get him, like, prepped to do this role and, like, being like, this is how you do it. And apparently, this will make Steve happy. Use a lot of footy analogies to kind of coach him. So there goes your another football reference.
Yeah, I'm a done talking about that today. Ugh.
Also, Caleb.
I'm a done talking about that.
The scene that Harvey Scrimshaw enjoyed the most but was the most scared was when he got to kiss Sarah Stevens, who was the witch.
Wait, what? Sorry.
When, we'll get to that point.
Okay.
He was really happy to kiss the witch.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
But he was scared.
But she was Gorgina.
Well.
Gorgina.
Gojimba. She was Gojira.
Anyway, Catherine gives birth to Samuel, played by twins Axton Henry and Ethan Conrad Dube.
Okay. Axton Henry.
Axton Henry sounds definitely like a guy that plays for a British footy team. But after a game of peekaboo with Thomason, the child mysteriously vanishes.
Bye-bye, baby.
Bye-bye, baby. My favorite name for alternate name for Planned Parenthood.
My mom walked into the room while I was watching this scene. She's like, are they going to kill the baby? I'm just like, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Legitimately made into baby batter. Because the child was kidnapped by the witch.
The child.
We find out that.
Yes, Grogu was kidnapped by the witch. I would love that. It's the exact same movie, but it's just baby
but
Yoda.
And then he's like, fuck no.
No, he still gets killed.
No, he still gets battered.
Oh, no.
He definitely gets killed still.
So this is where we get another interesting thing about this movie, historically.
Flying ointment.
Flying ointment was a legitimate hallucinogenic salve said to be used by European practitioners of witchcraft. Probably from around the time of the 1400s through the 1800s, also called green ointment. It was composed, theoretically, wink, wink,
a baby
nudge,
goo.
The fat of children dug from their own graves, first off. Like juice.
It's so specific.
Like, how?
It's like, okay.
How do you find a baby grave? They're going to be tiny.
Googles, what?
How are you going to find a baby grave?
Googles, what can I substitute for grave baby? Grave baby skin.
Turmeric.
Also, squirrel. Used as juice of smallage. A smallage being celery.
Celery?
Yeah.
I got a smallage for you.
Oh, so it's like a Bloody Mary. Like a baby Bloody Mary.
It's a legitimate Bloody Mary.
Baby
also
Bloody
includes
Mary.
Wolfbane, sink foil, and fine wheat meal.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now, more likely
it's not gluten-free, guys.
Not gluten-free. You cannot. So. If you're sorry to the celiacs and people that actually think they have gluten allergies out there. What it most likely contained from certain recipes that have been found is belladonna, which is also known as deadly nightshade.
Yeah.
Also a very good The Sword song.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Deadly nightshade. Also the name of
The Sword in a while.
Also the name of a gap-toothed porn star from back in the day, belladonna. I watched that one shove a baseball bat up her butt once.
Oh, my favorite porn star, deadly
Go
nightshade.
Go to therapy.
Hembane, gypsum weed, mandrake, and hemlock. All of those are part of the nightshade family. And fun fact, do you know it is also in the nightshade family that if you have an allergy to nightshade, you can't eat?
Wait, I knew this, but I forgot.
I feel like you know this from Top Chef.
I know this.
Shrimp?
Damn it, Steve, you got it. Shrimp.
Dude.
The answer would have been, what is potatoes and tomatoes? That's minus $500 for you, Jenna. And yo, I'm a witch. Doesn't even know the nightshade family. All of them contained tropane alkaloids that can be ingested or transdermally slathered on the body to cause psychoactive effects and also death. Because a lot of the women that tried to do this back in like the 14, 15, 16, 1700s, had no idea how to use this shit.
Also, like, to be fair, maybe they were trying to die, because it's like they lived in the 1600s and, like, what, they had no tampons. So, like, I'd probably, like, kill myself, too.
Fair point.
So.
So the effects of flying, the terminology flying would be legitimately these women tripping balls.
Yeah.
So, I mean, technically, I must be a witch then, because I've flown a couple times thanks to the lovely magic of mushrooms.
I've never flown in that sense, flown in a different sense.
But the idea of the broomstick, how that came to be, is one of my favorite witchcraft facts.
Tell us.
So they would have a stick, essentially, that was like for like attuning their spells, so to speak. But, and we kind of see the witch do this in her hut. What you could do is you could slather your green salve on it, and you could
fuck it,
ride it.
Yeah.
Ride your broomstick.
Oh my God. Witches are the original lesbians. I love that. That's so nice.
I think literal lesbians were the original lesbians.
Yeah. From Lemos. But no. They had fun. And of course there was a lot of supposed sexual applications to flying ointment.
Why not?
I mean, if you're living in that society, you may as well be a lesbian.
Yeah.
Anyway, paranoia and mistrust began to set in among the family as they mourned the loss of Samuel. Caleb, on his failed hunting trip of his father, because again, William can't do shit, questions if Samuel, who he believes is dead, will have gone to heaven as he was unbaptized. Will, not a big fan of that question. Changes the subject and tells the kid,
they hadn't come up with limbo yet. No.
Well, limbo's a Catholic thing. So there is no limbo.
Yeah.
No.
No.
Part of Catholicism. Gotcha. Made up. Not in the Bible. Not real.
That's part of the Catholicism.
Catholicism.
That's part of the Catholicism.
He does tell his son that he did sell Catherine's, silver wine mug, which was a family heirloom. In order to purchase the traps that they're not able to use in any way, shape, or form because they're fucking morons.
He was trying to catch, something to eat, right?
Food and also pelts to sell, because you would sell pelts to furriers and stuff like that so they can make hats.
Yeah.
The whole baptism thing is one of the few sacraments that Protestants do believe in. I think besides the sacrament of marriage... And that might be it. Protestants, email us, I guess.
Don't.
So that's like one of the sacraments that they did believe in, because that is technically something that was in the Bible. John the Baptist, Jesus went for a swim, all that fun stuff. Now, the loss of the silver cup soon sets Catherine against Thomason, believing she coveted it and has stolen it. And then later, as we see them eating their meager meal, which is going to come into play really importantly. Which I don't know if you caught that or not.
I didn't, because I don't know where you're going with this.
So the children overhear the parents whispering about wanting to send Thomason to work for another family. Because, they can't feed 5 children. Because
if you're... Stop fucking! Jeez!
No, if you're fucking, a baby better come out. So Caleb, kind of knowing that they're starving to a point, he tries to go off to the woods to set another trap. Only to be caught by Thomason, and they pretty much get stuck going together because she's a rat and nobody likes a rat. Now, a mysterious hare appears that sends Caleb in pursuit of the family dog, Fowler, who then chases after the rabbit. And then Thomason gets thrown from the horse because the horse is scared of the rabbit. Actual considered in American folklore that rabbits were considered to be either familiars of witches besides ravens.
I wasn't sure if she was shape-shifting.
That's kind of what's implied. It's kind of one way or the other. Yeah. The term witch's teat is actually a little fun fact here for you. Was said to be a witch had a secret nipple that she would feed her familiar with.
Literally, that's amazing. I have a secret nipple. Also.
God, that's why the cat's so fucking weird, isn't it?
Oh my God. Oh,
fuck. Anyway, when she wakes up, Thomason that is, she returns home without her brother, sending Catherine and Will into a panic. Caleb, while lost in the woods, finds himself ensorcelled by the witch, and then reappears later that night naked and ill. We've all been to a bar and met strange women. Nothing shocking here. As the twins Mercy and Jonas accuse Thomason of witchcraft, Caleb suffers from a seizure and vomits forth an apple with a single bite taken out of it. before seeing and calling for Jesus Christ to take him home into his arms and then dying, which is one of the best fucking scenes of this whole fucking movie, is legitimately Caleb going through this crazy fucking seizure and this acting performance. Fucking awesome.
This shit's fucking nuts.
Like,
it's
as a child, too, to like be able to be like legitimately so serious
convulse
and just, yeah,
the right way, yeah, essentially.
I would be giggling.
And also, shout out to the twins, because those kids fucking also kind of stole a couple scenes in this movie.
Yeah.
When they can't do the Lord's Prayer. Like,
yeah,
I said, if
they're
you can't do the
they
Lord's...
They were wild.
Oh, yeah.
They're
exactly what, like, I don't know what how old they were. I think five?
What you would think.
Oh, yeah. That's exactly how 5-year-olds would act.
Yeah.
Like, again, they were also great when Will ends up screaming at them. They're like, oh, shit. Anyway, Caleb dies. And enraged, William locks the remaining children outdoors, Thomason for her accusations of being a witch from the twins, and the twins for their conversing with Black Philip, the family's black billy goat. So overnight, Thomason overhears William confess while he's outside chopping wood that what is occurring is his fault due to his pride and believing that he was more devout. Catherine suffers from...
it was all of his fault.
It was absolutely all of his fault.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, glad we got there, bud.
Catherine ends up hallucinating a vision of Caleb and Sam, and the witch then returns to feed on the goat that's locked in the, essentially, goat shack with the children, and then kills the twins. If we can slowly put the puzzle here together, we notice that outside the farm, we have the... I'm sure there's a fucking term for it, but like the corn stalks. You do that to dry the corn kernels. The problem is this is something that it's prevalent. It was prevalent in Europe. Not so much in warmer climates. Definitely in the New World is something called ergot, which is a fungi that grows on rye specifically, but on other grains. And the black fruiting bodies produce hallucinogenic alkaloids, just like hemlock, that can cause ergotism. Now, if you were kind of slowly, closely watching, when you're watching Catherine shuck the corn, and she's using whatever the fuck that knife is, there's a term, I think it's like a bill hook or
the
something.
The one that
bill
kind
hook
of was like curved?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a bill hook.
Kind of look, it the corn's black on certain parts of it. That's ergot.
Yeah.
So the family that's eating basically cornmeal have been ingesting ergot, which is causing ergotism, which is a long-term poisoning that causes severe convulsions, hallucinations, and if you got too much of it, gangrene, because legitimately you're convulsing so bad and the vascular portions of your peripheral body, so noses, ears, hands, feet, it's a lot like leprosy. They constrict, so people that legitimately had ergot, like, they got gangrene, and their fingers and noses and ears would fall off. So basically besides that, causes severe hallucinations, severe seizures, psychosis, mania, vomiting, diarrhea. Yay, Pepto-Bismol. Anyway, that's essentially kind of the real world truth to what's happening to this family, is they're all fucking tripping balls and they're all too religious for their own good.
Gotcha.
Just like if you ever advise anybody, if you're ever going to trip first couple times, don't look in the mirror. You'll freak yourself out.
Yeah, I still think it was the witch, but thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for that.
Well, that's a whole thing, too, in the colonies, especially during when the ramping up of the persecution of quote-unquote witches was, this is something that, like, was prevalent. And if you ate the fucking grains, you would fucking trip balls.
So possibly these people, they were just tripping.
Yeah. They were just and not having a good time. It's not a good time when you don't know what's going to happen, you know? Sometimes it is, but that's beside the point. William is gored to death the next day by Black Philip, while Thomas...
That caught me by surprise. I was like, oh!
It's so cool. It's just so cool and good.
I was like, Black Philip's so cute. Like, I was just like, oh.
Apparently, he was a very bad, bad goat.
Good.
On set. He legitimately did it.
Wasn't he supposed to be, like, evil?
Yeah.
The devil or whatever you want to call it?
Yeah, he legitimately attacked Ralph Ineson, like, multiple times.
Nice. You go, Black Philip.
So I feel bad for Black Philip. Guy clearly did, you know, just trying to make money, did not want to be there. But yeah, goats are fucking metal as shit. Thomason beats her mother to death after Will is gored to death because
Thomason is a bad bitch.
Oh, yeah. She fucking beat the shit out of her mother.
Love her.
And then after she passes out, because legitimately everyone in the family is now dead, she is visited by Black Phillip, who she conjured forth to speak. And shockingly, the goat asks, "What dost thou want?" Oh, I can't do the fucking voice.
Yeah, don't.
"Wouldn't thou like a taste of butter or pretty dress? Wouldst thou like to live deliciously?"
You kept saying that yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, love living deliciously.
Live deliciously. Thomason, obviously, at this point, yeah, you want to live deliciously. Like, she signs her name to the devil's book that's presented to her, which is another thing, supposedly, people would try to plant fake books with signatures in it to get women to be, clearly you have the book. You have the devil's book.
These people would be surprised at the world today. They'd be like, evidence. Yeah.
Spectral evidence.
Yeah.
Black Phillip then shapeshifts into Handsome Phillip, I guess is the only way to refer to him.
Yeah, I was like, I think this guy's cute. You like kind of don't
professional
see.
Model, so yeah. He then leads her to the Coven of Witches as they're whooping and hollering in ceremony around the bonfire, and then they ascend to the air with the magic of the flying ointment. And everybody's happy.
That was literally amazing. I loved that. I said, I want more of that. And also, there was one of the witches, she had a big long butt. And I was like, that's me.
So, yeah, there was a legitimate Jenna Longbutt in this movie.
Yeah, so that like made me happy. You know, I felt like
Longbutt.
I felt seen.
I felt seen in this movie.
So the actresses that were the witches were actually using the Enochian tongue, which is a magical language. It's a dialect that's used in occultism that's supposed to be actually the language of angels that supposedly originated in the 16th century. If you ever read Aleister Crowley, he talks about a lot of the spirits he talked to and spoke to them in the Enochian tongue. There is like legitimately like an alphabet and a dialect and ways to speak it, but they used that when they were.
Wasn't that guy a magician?
Aleister Crowley is an occultist. He would call himself a magician or a warlock.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. He was just a guy that was really.
We listened
fucked
to
up.
Them. Right. We listened about that.
Yeah. We listened. Yeah.
Okay.
Also, the butter reference, which is really weird, and I found this out.
Oh, I was going to say, I love just eating butter by
first
itself.
Off, if somebody's like, do you want butter? Fuck yeah.
Okay,
Paula Deen? Bring that bitch out here. Let's fucking fry something up.
It has to be in the little gold package.
Yeah.
In the square. It has to be that specific butter.
Yes.
And then I will.
Restaurant butter.
Yeah, and then I will pop it in my mouth. Pop, pop, pop.
Oh, yeah, we have to fucking afford a cardiologist now, don't we?
I already went to the cardiologist. I'm fine.
Oh, good. So the idea of butter, because in medieval Catholicism, if you were to actively seek out and eat butter, it was considered a crime of gluttony that was actually worse than lying. And then the Protestants got mad about this during the Reformation because the Catholics would specifically use it as a means to try and basically enforce stupid laws against poor people. If they were get, it was like legitimately class warfare because of the Catholic Church over butter. So you appreciate your little Land O'Lakes stick up there, lady.
I am. I'm gonna.
And that's the witch.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
It rocked my freaking socks off.
So I think I know how we all probably feel about this. So let's drop our ratings and then we can discuss it.
Jenna, you picked the movie. You go first.
I gave it a 4.5 out of 5. And
okay.
Okay.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. Okay.
And
okay.
I chose that because I wanted to give it 5, honestly. Like I was like, this is a great movie. But I will say it was a little, like, drawn out. Like, I feel like there was just a few things that I was like, okay, you know? And also, it was hard to follow because of the way that they spoke. So, like, if you're not comfortable with that.
Yeah, that weird
Scott didn't put on the captions, so I did my best. And then he yelled at me when he turned it down. And I said, you could put the captions on.
Yeah, but we didn't need the captions.
We clearly did need the captions. Mm. So, but yeah, I think it was, honestly, it was a fantastic movie, and I'd watch it again without Scott.
Fair enough. I give it a 4.5 as well. My only problem with the movie is legitimately the sound. The sound, and not the sound design or the music design. It's just legitimately like...
Because it's so...
It's a movie that, like, it's very loud at points, but when it's not... The dialogue is a little bit hard to hear.
Yeah.
That's my only caveat with this entirety of this fucking movie. And besides that, it's fantastic. It's damn near perfect. It's A24. We're obviously A24 fans. Take that with a grain of salt. The CinemaScore when this movie came out was shockingly funny, with like less than 47% of audiences enjoying it, which is silly because, of course, most people are going to be like, I don't get it.
What? I feel like, too, what was really good about it was just how, besides the kid's haircut, was how, like, accurate feeling, you know, like the clothes, the way
legitimately
they spoke,
traditional clothing
and
from
even
the time,
just
yeah.
like how dreary it looked, you know, just like you kind of would assume that it would be like a dreary vibe as it was, you know, nobody had toilet paper. Or a toilet. So I would be sad too. So like, I don't know. I felt like they did a really good job of like making it authentic. And that's kind of why I was like, hell yeah.
Yeah. There's some authenticity stuff that we'll talk about. Steve, I'm assuming I have an idea where your score is.
I'm at a 5.
Okay.
I'm at a full blown 5. I love this movie. I think it's phenomenal. I do think that it is a movie that I can definitely see why some people get thrown around on it, right? I mean, it definitely doesn't hold your hand in any way like a lot of movies would. You know, you can envision almost... how this movie would go if it were by a different director and it wasn't part of this, you know, quote unquote elevated horror that A24 does, right? You can kind of see it being
I hate that term so much.
I know, and we're gonna get into that, but you could kind of see the Conjuring of it all, how it could have been a movie like that, like or like The Village or something, where it just kind of peddles in the easy things just to scare you. And there's a couple, definitely, I wouldn't call them jump scares, but it kind of with the sonic cues, when, you know, you're talking about there's some very loud parts, it definitely hits you with that. I mean, as far as the score goes, it's like a lot of, it was expressly sought to make this score be like atonal and non-musical, even though it's with instruments. So it like adds this air of tension and unease throughout.
Yeah, I think he specifically, the music was written so Eggers, if he wanted the notes to be changed to fit a scene, you can move it around. So it's a very interesting score because it is very both subtle and very, it's not grandiose in any way. It's very limited, which is just kind of fits that whole dreary kind of nihilistic tone of the movie, which is just like, you're gonna die, essentially. Yeah.
And I mean, the acting is obviously phenomenal, but again, it's one of those movies that you almost get stuck by just saying, you know, it's vibes or something, as stupid and ephemeral as it is. But what has become like this kind of dumb phrase of just being things that are vibey or have vibes. It is really immersion. I mean, that's what the traditional language and dialect does. That's what, you know, Eggers pretty much almost entirely shot the film only by candlelight and natural light. You know, like all of that stuff is what really sucks you in and makes it a perfect experience. So, I mean, sure, I can see why someone might be off put by this if all they're used to is that kind of very run-of-the-mill, like, tentpole horror. But maybe this is just because I have it on my brain because I've been playing Elden Ring forever this weekend. But, like, this kind of does get into that tier of, like, this is, like, the quote-unquote... this, to me, this is, like, the Dark Souls of movies. Not this particular one, but movies like this kind of are, like... because...
the setting is so immersive that it's kind it's the story itself.
It's not even that. It revels in the foreignness. It revels in making you feel like unease. It's not trying to walk you through and be like, and now you get scared, and now you don't like this, and now you figure, and here's why the witch is doing this, like. Everything is supposed to make you feel like holy shit and kind of helpless and confused, and it warrants you having to put in the time and the effort to watch it and to, you know, possibly learn more about it if you have to. But if you don't want to learn about it, you're fine. So I think that this movie and movies like it, that elevated horror, which we can start that discussion now, I suppose, that's what they offered. And some of them missed the boat, like when we looked at something like Lamb, which now we're at, like, you know, this is one of the earlier ones. What was it, 2015?
Yeah, 2015 for The Witch.
You know, and now though they're like kind of firmly established as like a weird little subgenre thing, and you have a movie like Lamb that says almost nothing. It does almost nothing.
Yeah, now watching this one, now I'm like, Lamb isn't as good, you know?
I gotta imagine maybe Black Phillips' family line eventually led to Lamb Man.
Now I get why you didn't like Lamb, Steve.
Yeah, because it had like this faux impenetrability that it made it seem like the lack of giving you anything was part of the appeal, but it didn't have anything beneath that. It didn't have something that, like, right? Like, and that's part of the Dark Souls analogy too, as funny as it is. It's like, you have to work towards it to get to feel the accomplishment, right? You have to put in the time. And so that's the thing with Witch. You have to give it the benefit of the doubt, and you have to think about it, and you have to put in, so you get the visceral scares and stuff when things happen, but you have to think on it and put together its themes because it's a good piece of art. And Lamb, there's none of that. There's nothing really to put together, and besides it just being a weird movie for the sake of being weird.
Yeah, that was kind of what I was thinking about a little bit when, like, especially like we're doing these Dark Souls analogies because we're fucking nerds, but like that idea of, like, you know, being the outsider into this world, like that's legitimately like William and his family were. They were fucking emigrated here out of religious fears. They were outsiders, you know, this colony then forced them to become somehow like an outer outsider by banishing them.
Yeah.
So they have legitimately nothing. They're just trapped essentially in this world. We have that conversation in the movie with William and Catherine, how she wants to go back in England and she didn't even truly want to be with William and all these things. It's like the environment really brings out the dread and the horror of where they're at. And then when you kind of look back at Lamb now, I was thinking about this a whole lot last night when I was like kind of reading through some stuff and trying to get my thoughts together. It's beautiful. It's one of the things I do love about Lamb. It's a beautiful landscapes you see, but it doesn't have that foreignness because it's a family that's established. They're alone. They're isolated. That's 100% true. But they're still a family. They have minor conveniences. You know that they're there by choice and for their reasons. And it does, like, you kind of look at Lamb now and it kind of feels like A24 was just trying to almost do like the Witch Redux, but in modern times, and just try to like ride that a little bit, because I think like you really start to see just how that movie just really, the more you think about it, it starts to fail as like a concept for a film, where The Witch does it superbly from the get-go. That's my thoughts on that, at least.
And I think that's kind of like what's happened though now, right? I mean, The story of like the witch getting made was basically, as far as I recall, was Eggers was really like working on Lighthouse and trying to get Lighthouse made and having a really hard time selling it, and then somehow sold the witch, right? So like you have a guy who is like, he's made two movies and he had the two movies pretty much done at the same time. Like you have an artist who has something he wants to say and is trying to get those films made, and he has a vision for the film being made. You look at something like Lamb, and what's inventive about it? You know, we've gotten to the point where we can have tropes in this kind of style of whatever you want to call it, elevated horror, art house horror, A24 core, whatever kind of bullshit you want to call it. It has its own like language that it peddles in now. Without, where with The Witch, you have these things like we mentioned, right? He's like combing through primary sources and like in some cases pulling dialogue directly from it, or at least making dialogue that paraphrases and mimics things that are in there. He's trying to find the perfect filming locations to the point where he picks out like a town with like 10 people in it in fucking Canada. He's filming with natural light and in like fucking candles. He's making a score. He has a score that he can move individual notes around and shit, while having pretty much the entirety of Lighthouse done and in his back pocket, already thinking about all the bullshit he wants to do with that.
While shooting this whole movie in 25 days.
Right.
Which is even more phenomenal. Yeah.
Yeah. Lamb doesn't have any shit like fucking casting actors from England because of, you know, making sure the accents were going to be correct. You know, all kinds of shit like that. And we're starting to get movies that put on this facade of that and peddle in that language. I forget what it was, but I saw something I was scrolling through the other day, and it was like a Blumhouse movie that was trying to look like a non-Blumhouse movie and stuff, and it looked more like a, you know, one of, you know, A24 or Neon or one of these other companies that kind of makes this more indie style shit. And the problem with talking about it like this, though, is I can't think of many new horror movies that don't ape this style. Another one, which we didn't really talk about that much, was Night House. That's a recent one that's kind of...
Yeah, that's very similar to this.
It's
vibe.
It does the whole
vibe,
does the whole, you know, does the whole vibes. It's actually a horror film that's a meditation on grief. Wow. One of those brand new concepts. And it kind of peddles in that same stuff. And it was fine, but, I mean, everything is kind of hitting those same beats now. And I don't know, the sad reality is every other movie that comes out that isn't that, new ones are bad. It's fucking...
Well, it starts getting hard to find the ones that are going to be good, because there are so few of these out that now, because they're so prevalent, you're just, and they're not as enjoyable, that you just don't even want to take the chance that you find, you know, the diamond in the rough, that it might be somewhat like The Witch or Hereditary or Lighthouse or any of those films, because half the time, like, I did not like The Night House. It's one of those movies where it's like I saw right through it, and it was not enjoyable, because it was trying just to not be authentic.
Well, it's like reminding me, like, this is what's trendy right now, right? So like,
yeah,
think about fast fashion. You can get something, you know, quickly, but it's going to be made poorly and it'll probably fall apart later. It doesn't, like, stand up. That's kind of basically the same thing here. It's like,
yeah,
they're not made, you know, the same way that the original concepts were done, and they're not going to stand up to these movies. It's just, this is the trend right now for horror.
Yeah, and I think that it's what annoys me. And then when you talk about elevated horror as well, I hate that term, because then critics use that as a term to say, basically say that they enjoyed a horror movie, but because most critics do not enjoy horror as a genre, and rightfully so in a way, so they use the term elevated horror as a means to, like, say it without saying it, but then that terminology is now completely fucking useless. It's just going back to being horror, and they don't like it, and now the movies kind of embody that negative sentiment, you know? So it's like this weird, like, Ouroboros of just stupid, pointless terminology, and it's eating itself. And then you can't find, and you can't trust reviews then of movies that come out like this. So it's kind of this weird cycle of, what do you find that you want to watch now that's like this? Because you're not getting something that's just this legitimately authentic.
Yeah. Yeah, the phrase elevated horror is kind of like when you say tolerance or something else, where there's like an implied put down in it, right? Like when you say like, oh, I'm very tolerant, that means like, oh, you're in some sort of position where, oh, well, I tolerate those people. And when you say you're elevating horror, it's like, oh, because regular horror is like so fucking base and barbaric.
Well, like, it's like separate, you know, it's like putting them, well, this is the good shit and this is the bad shit.
I mean,
we said elevated.
Well, it's just like in restaurants too, is the guy that's working restaurants for fucking forever. It's like, oh, it's an elevated pub grub menu. It's a delicious craft beer. Like, it's terms. Just say you make a fucking good burger at your place. Just say you have a really interesting.
Scott wants you to call it real good horror.
It's just real good finger licking horror.
Real good horror.
Horror. But yeah, I mean, it's like we're all making these nice, legitimate, real world connections, which is just kind of like this dumbing down by critics. And people that are authority figures and talking about them, whether it's food, fashion, or film, that, like, it's just, again, that it's a pointless word that then makes that word pointless. Like the tolerance analogy, you know? Yeah. And it just seems so transparent, but people just lap it up. And that's why I just get so, like, I don't want to say bent out of shape, just apathetic. When I'm on, like, Reddit, or horror Reddit is, like, completely, like, bad with this. But, of course, of Twitter discourse, quote-unquote, it's just people regurgitating something they read without a well-thought-out reason why they like something, and then understanding the aspects is why they like it. You know, it just becomes bad. It's the only way to say it. It's just lackluster, and just you're just like, fuck, this makes me fucking soft.
Yeah, there is, though, and this is the counterpoint and the thing that makes it kind of upsetting also, but it's kind of what I was kind of implying before, which is, yeah, we hate the phrase, folks, it sucks, but, like, what do you call this? Because As we know, and as we bust balls, there is a particular kind of horror fan, and those people that on that, you know, CineScore or whatever, who are like, oh, no, there was no good kills and it's boring and blah blah blah. That it sounds so elitist to say, and I know we grapple with that constantly, but it becomes like very much so becomes a problem where. You have a bunch of people that don't like this, and I don't want to say, like, it's objectively good, but also, like, come on, it's pretty fucking good, and it's more interesting than the new Texas Chainsaw movie, and it's more interesting than fucking Halloween Kills, and it's more interesting than like, any fucking straight-to-Hulu, Redbox, whatever the fuck, Blumhouse film, and all these other, you know, the kind of horror movie that always get, you know, that gets made. And it's like, even as horror fans, there's always this thing, especially as horror fans, there's always this thing where we always have to differentiate to begin with between, oh, I like this movie, this was a good movie, and, oh, I like this movie, it's so fucking funny or fucked up or whatever.
Where, yeah, I kind of feel like that's where I'm at for like the movies like this that I truly do love, and we talked about in After Hours, that elitist tone. I also do like legitimately like really bad movies, blood sucking freaks like we covered, you know, really stupid exploitation films in a way too. But it's almost because I think, and this is gonna sound such like a fucking douchebag thing to say, but it's like because I know that the people that like exploitation films and the people that like A24 core elevated horror are the people I actually legitimately want to talk to, because they probably have more interesting things to say than, damn, old man Leatherface killed a man and that was cool and I like that. Like, I don't want to talk to people and have conversations like that, because it's just like talking to a schmuck at the bar and I'm bartending and I'm just like, yep, tell me more. Okay.
So, scholarly horror.
Scholarly horror.
I've been thinking of things to call it. Professional horror. I'm working on it.
This is professional horror. Yeah, but I think
this
is
horror that makes you. Here's the for what I'm gathering from what you both are saying. This horror film was one where you had to. It wasn't just kill, blood, blah. It was like story, intent. You know, this intense story where you had to pay attention. You had to learn basically through it, and you guys enjoy that, where in some horror just lays it out for you. Like Steve said, this one didn't hold your hand.
It's like getting a hand job at the back of the bus, you know? It's just like, it's fun, but...
And not everybody is capable of that, though, because...
That's fair. No, like that's a fair assessment, truly.
Look at the world we live in and the choices that are made and the things that are done daily. Like, do you think this movie is for everybody? No, some people think it sucks because you didn't get it. You couldn't follow.
Yeah.
That's why you think it sucks.
But I don't know. I come from a school of thought where I do believe in like a degree of objectivity in art. Like if you there's like this myth of subjectivity, I think, and like subjectivity exists, and like you can feel a certain way about art, but art also has objective qualities. That's what imparts subjectivity. You know, you experience something because something is the way that it is, and that's immutable. And so when you talk about a piece of art, there's like you have a film like The Witch, where objectively there is good acting, objectively it is shot well, objectively it has a good story. Like that, you might not personally resonate with it, but it's one of those things where you can't argue with the artistry.
I agree with you on that. I'm just,
and so there is a thing when if someone says I don't like it, blah blah blah, fine. But with horror as a genre, for some reason, I'll say we, even though I'm not amongst them, just to pretend like, you know, I share some traits with these fucking freaks. we pretend like I don't know, like there is artistic, like, oh, we like things, but we pretend like there's artistic value in certain films that there is none beyond the craft of the pure craft of like you were able to make that. And so there is a thing with horror where we get into that a little bit more and we confuse that with it being a good film overall. We'll look at a movie like, I don't know, maybe something like Bloodsucking Freaks, right? And there are some things about it that you can go, oh, well, there's some okay effects or whatever. And you can be like, okay, sure. But that doesn't justify, even though there was like one piece of like artfully done things, objectively impressive things. We get caught up in that because we like the feeling of that shit gives us, because we're being scared, and that's how we feel about comedies, and that's how we feel about horror. And I think people act as though you don't get that with drama films, and that's the movies that, you know, everyone gets so attached to as being like, these are great films and it's going to be, it's Oscar worthy and blah, blah, blah. And I think because these films share DNA with that, it somehow becomes more valid because you can say, oh, well, it's a horror, but it's also got kind of dramatic elements, blah, blah, blah. And so it's easier to make that jump to being able to say that it's actually good and artful. So it's like this double-edged sword where it has objectively artful qualities, but that's also something that we're not looking at in horror. So so much of the time, because horror is so much goes so much on gut feeling when as horror fans. So it like shoots itself in the foot, and it ends up appealing to audiences that aren't quote unquote traditional horror fans.
Yeah, I mean, that's well put. I mean, I do at times fall into that trap. It's like, I do love the art of filmmaking, the practical effects. Those are things people I know. But you are right to a degree that, you know, that is not a justification of what is good. So I'm going to give that to you. You're not incorrect. I'm just happy that we got to do a really legitimately good movie for the first time. Not a while. I mean,
you're welcome. You're welcome.
Thank you. Because we're about to do an objectively bad movie next week for St. Paddy's Day.
Oh, fuck. That's next week?
Yes.
Oh.
Leprechaun!
Yes.
We're gonna do the original, only because I have some plans for probably April that are going to allow us to revisit Leprechaun.
Literally, stop it.
It's gonna be so much fun. It's a bad movie, but it's got Jennifer Aniston.
Oh, I don't care about her.
Nah, I don't care about her either, but I thought that might have been a selling point for you.
I like which one with the big boobies? Jennifer Love Hewitt. Ugh, love her. She's got a
not in that movie.
She's got a big old long face and just poofy hair and big old boobies. I'm a fan.
Well, you're not going to be a fan of Leprechaun, so
I know.
Obviously, we got to do it. It's St. Paddy's Day. We gotta.
I feel
gotta appeal to the Irish audience.
I feel ill already. Thank you. I just pictured the Leprechaun's face in my brain. Oh my god!
I'm gonna make it up to you for different movies, so don't worry. So that's next week. Okay. Maybe we'll drink a little Jameson while we do it to make it slightly more palatable for you.
Oh hell yeah!
Okay.
And so what we're gonna be doing is we're gonna cover Leprechaun, the first one, and then next year we're gonna cover the second one, and we're gonna do each Leprechaun movie every St. Patrick's Day until there are no more, and at which case the podcast will summarily end.
Yeah. when we're done with Leprechaun, we're
how
done
many
with the show.
Are there?
Oh god,
it's like eight.
8 years I gotta do this shit. Pass.
God, we're gonna have like a kid at one point towards the end.
Just a kid?
I would assume within 8 years, you're probably getting knocked up.
Eh. We'll see.
With your own little leprechaun.
No! I do love a little redheaded baby.
Listen, if we have a redheaded baby, freckles? I'm disowning it.
Okay. Great. Good to know.
Our child were like questionably ethnic and nothing else.
Great future parent here.
Absolutely. Steve, where do we find you on the internet?
Yeah, at Root Speaker on stuff. Maybe I'll stream some Elden Ring at some point. I don't know. I don't really care. I've already stopped streaming, but please follow me on Twitter. I don't even tweet anymore, but just it makes me feel bad to see the number go down. So because people are just like, this motherfucker's not tweeting. I'm like, you're right. I just
I've gotten to the point where I just mute a bunch of people. Every time I see somebody whine, I mute them.
Oh my god, I can mute you?
Thank you. weirdly, people do keep following me, and then they whine or they say something stupid, and I mute them, and then my feed is just legitimately just like sports stuff and vintage porn.
My feed? What?
Sometimes I follow like a couple of vintage porn, like here's a woman of a big, bold, beautiful bush, and I'm like, that's cool.
Grow up, Scott. I'm blocking you on Twitter.
Please follow. Yeah, make sure you follow Root Speaker on Spotify as well. I have both an artist page that has my two available songs, which are collaborations with my friend Anna Yang, who I'm going to be marrying in June. Not getting married to her, but I'm going to be the officiant.
I was about to say, is Michelle aware of this?
I knew what you were saying after you said it, but my first reaction was like, I'm sorry, what?
Well, yeah, I realized that after I said it too. I'm like, I feel like people are going to get confused.
You're marrying them, her and her partner.
Yeah, so that'd be cool, and check out our songs, but also my regular page, and that's where you can see my cool playlists, as well as the playlist we'll be doing for the podcast. Pretty much everything is up for this month, except for the movie Scott still hasn't decided to pick as to what he's going to do.
I haven't decided what that is, and then we did decide what is going to be the magnum opus of this month, and I'm very excited for that. But if you want to follow me, and you should, at Da Ghoul Daddy, D-A Ghoul Daddy, on the Twitters, on the Instagrams. I do stuff for the Facebooks, too, but don't follow me on there. I fucking hate it, and I don't want you to know my actual name. Follow the show at Groovy Little Pod, same places. Big announcement, I guess. We are on the Stitcher now, CastBox, and Pod something or other. So if you don't want to use the Spotify or the Apple or the Googles or any of that, you have other options. I know people are messaging me, be like, go on Stitcher. I like Stitcher. So I did it. By the time you're hearing this, the show should be available there. I already did all the sign-up stuff for that. And I'm guessing, Jenna, we don't find you anywhere.
I'm dead. I died.
Because you're a witch.
Mm-hmm. Oh, also, random thing. If you got to Patreon and you listened to the first After Hours episode, that intro is a clip from a song I made several years ago for a D&D campaign. And I just clipped it because it sounded like shit, and I thought it would be funny to make you pay money for that.
Oh, yeah, follow the Patreon, Groovy Little Spook Show. Some of you have joined.
Oh, yeah.
I totally forgot to put down the people that have signed up and name them. I will promise to put you in the show notes, though, when the episode's
up. Open it up now. Open it up right now.
Yeah,
open it up
right Scott.
Now. Oh, my God.
Just do it. Just open it up. I'll keep vamping for the. We're already like an hour and a half in.
Yeah, this was.
We can't fucking bail on them in the first fucking week.
Hang on. I'm loading. We got Charlie Walls, who I know he's a big fan of us on the Twitter because he's always hanging out and chatting with me, and he's a funny dude. Kirk Cruz of the Mutant Fam, but he's mad at me because I shit talked Mutant Fam on After Hours, but that's okay. Somebody
subscribed and then got mad.
Yes.
Sick.
Yeah, I know. Listen, folks, if you enjoy After Hours, we have so many worst opinions we can't wait to share and make you pay to hear. Someone just named Goblin. Thank you.
Hi, Goblin.
I'm not John Goblicon of NecroGoblicon, unfortunately.
I wish.
Hex Dragon, and a couple other people.
I definitely should be doing this. I forgot you don't know how to read.
Yeah, you need to redo this for next time.
I will. I'm gonna write it down.
Because Scott's.
I will double say everyone's name. I will write it out. Your names will be in the show notes. Now that's
thank
it.
You. Thank you for subscribing.
Also, thank you for subscribing. Yeah.
Thank you.
And also, haha, for making you mad.
Mutant Fam ain't happy with Scott because his opinions have changed about people.
He should have said a lot, and then it would have rhymed.
It's okay. Anyway, just leave you guys with a parting thought. Dig through the ditches.
And burn through the witches. Slam in the back of my Dracula.